Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. Great to be with you on the 19th of January. Hope you're having a great day. We're getting me hooked up to the internet here. We've got a couple of router problems, and so I can't get to a couple things I was going to bring to you off the bat while they get me up and going on that. What I'm going to just do is go through a little refresher on what I talked about last week. I had a lot of comments, and I had a lot of good feedback on the show I did last week on private equity. For those of you who were listening, you may recall that I went through a very, very, very detailed discussion of how that works. And I did it, of course, as people have begun to wonder how that works, as the Republican candidate for president looks like it's going to be, in fact the odds are like 99% that the candidate is going to be Mitt Romney. Literally, it's pretty much a done deal. And so Mitt Romney, of course, earned his fortune in private equity. He's really one of the founders of the private equity business. And so last week I went through a discussion of that in detail. Okay, my internet's back up. Before I get back to private equity, before I do a little refresher about what I talked about last week, and then maybe extend the discussion a little bit beyond last week into a little more general area, and then make room for your calls. Before we do that, I do want to bring to your attention an article that just depresses the hell out of me. And it's going to depress you too. But the good news is that at least it looks like something's beginning to be done and recognized here. This is an article from Bettina Wassener, who writes for the Green blog column in the New York Times and has been for the New York Times following the story of the annihilation of the population of sharks in our oceans. For the New York Times. And in this article of just 3 days ago, she indicates that now, as if it wasn't enough that all the sharks in the ocean are being eliminated for shark fin soup, a subject that I've talked about on the show before, there is now a growing, burgeoning, massive trade in manta rays and what are called mobula rays. So rays, which are cousins to sharks, are now under threat. Same marketplace, China, Hong Kong. And I have to tell you, we've got to do something about this, folks. What is going on in the oceans is catastrophic. And our politicians should be doing something about it. At the national level, they're not. But at least we're starting to see bans taking place here in the United States. California has now banned any trade in shark fins and sharks. Canada, parts of Canada, the city of Toronto has done it. I believe Oregon and the state of Washington are moving as well on this. There really is grassroots movement going on as people understand the catastrophe that is happening in our oceans as we humans cause mass extinction, not only here on Earth, for species like tigers and lions, elephants, but also in the oceans. Tuna, sharks, and now manta rays. Let me just give you a little piece of this news about rays, because this is totally something that is out of left field, is shocking everybody. A few years ago, something surprising began turning up in Asia's fish markets. The gill rakers of manta and mobula rays, right? The gills of these animals. Sean Heinrichs and Paul Hilton, photographers who have been monitoring the international soaring trade in shark fins, decided to find out what was going on. The appearance of those creatures in the markets came as a real shock to us, Mr. Heinrichs said by phone from Indonesia. They don't even taste good, so what was the reason? On Saturday, the conservation organizations Shark Savers and Wild Aid released the result of a comprehensive global study showing that these species, manta and mobula rays, have been driven to the brink of extinction within a chillingly short space of time. The main reason is demand from China, where their gill rakers are marketed as a supposed cure for a variety of ailments. All these animals going extinct for ancient Chinese medicine. The southern Chinese city of Guangzhou is the hub of the trade in the dried parts, which retail for as much as $500 a kilogram. That's $225 for a pound. The gills are boiled along with other fish products in a soup that is promoted as a cure for anything from chicken pox to cancer. Okay, so you get the point here. I mean, I don't need to read any more of this article. You understand what's going on. I immediately went to Wild Aid, the other organization is Shark Savers. I made a substantial donation to Wild Aid. I'm trying to get them to come on the show. I'm emailing back and forth. I would simply ask, as you listen to the New Capital Show and you listen to KPFT, and you know that there is no other radio station. Maybe on 88.7 they'll do a spot on it, but nowhere else on the radio are you going to hear about this, and people must hear about it. So go forth, tell other people. It's not just sharks anymore. It's now rays. And it's coming from China. And, of course, China is our largest creditor. How many products do we import from China? You would think that our politicians would stand up and say, listen, we can't tolerate this environmental behavior, non-environmental behavior, rather. We can't do business with you if you don't stop this kind of behavior. This is what I would like to see in our presidential candidates. So please, do what you can do. Visit the website of Wild Aid. It's all one word. They do good work. They're out of San Francisco. Shark Savers. They are now focused on this issue of rays. And as I said, I am happy to see that more politically progressive states located on the West Coast of the United States are beginning to take action at the state level, at the local level. We know our federal government will not do anything, being that much of it's controlled by Republicans who don't care about the environment, who don't care about sharks, who don't care about rays, who've never conserved anything in their lives, though they call themselves conservatives. They ought to call themselves waste-ervatives, not conservatives. What's the opposite of conservative? Huh? Disservative.
Well, disservative.
Unservative. That's that party. Now back to that party. Anyway, during the phone call segment, if you want to talk about rays and sharks, we can talk about that too. My segue is into presidential politics and talking about private equity. Again, a refresher from last week. I mentioned to you, I didn't mention, I described ad nauseum, that private equity is the result of the formation of limited partnerships in which private equity promoters serve as the general partners, even though they put in a fraction, a very small percentage of the total financial assets into a partnership with the limited partners who do not have power to control the partnership, who aren't the people going out and finding the investments, they're the money. Oftentimes those organizations putting in money as limited partners are pension funds, right? So here's the biggest funny thing of all is that the pension plans of rank and file workers are being invested in private equity funds, right? Because they can't get returns just buying stocks and bonds, you know, like you and me, right? They can't get enough return from just investing in our public markets. They got to invest in private equity. So pension funds, endowments, right? Your money is put in large amounts, if you have a pension, into the Bain Capitals of the world. And the Bain Capital serve as the general partners. And because they are the general partners, they are able to charge money in two ways. First, they charge an annual management fee, the same way that if you own a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund or an index fund, the same way that those funds charge fees. But whereas your Vanguard index fund may charge 20 basis points, and I encourage everybody out there, if you want to talk finance and understand what's going on out there in the world of money, you need to know the words basis points, and you need to know what they are, okay? A basis point is 1/100 of a percent. So 50 basis points is 0.5%. And that is the way that guys like me in the world of assessing fees on finances, on capital, that's the way we talk. We talk in basis points. Okay? So whereas your Vanguard index fund may charge 0.2%, okay, here's a test. How many basis points is 0.2%? Got the answer? If you said 20, you got it. 20 basis points is 0.2%. So whereas your Vanguard index fund charges 20 basis points, the Bain Capitals of the world annually on the amount of capital they manage, and remember I gave you a $1 billion fund, they charge 200 basis points. Okay? That's their management fee. That just pays the bills to keep the lights on, right? Okay, so a $1 billion fund, they get $20 million in fees, management fees. And that money, as I indicated to you, will be taxed at income tax rates. I called it 35%. And then I told you that what the private equity guys really want is for the value of the investments to go up. Right? They're in the business to make that their investments go up in value because they get a 20% bonus called the carried interest on any appreciation in the investment. So if the $1 billion fund grows to $2 billion, that's a $1 billion appreciation. They get 20% of that appreciation. That's called carried interest. And what is that money taxed at? Well, that money is considered by the federal government to be long-term capital gains. And it's taxed at 15%. It's taxed at 15%. And as I described to you, that is, you know, to me, totally contrary to what that money is and what it should be taxed as. That is essentially labor income. It is a transfer of capital from the limited partners to the general partners, so it could well be eligible for transfer taxes. I told you that gift taxes in this country, if you have, let's say, a lot of money, if you have $50 million and you wanted to give that to your kids, you couldn't just give it to them without paying taxes. You'd have to pay taxes to give your kids the money, and the taxes you would pay would be 35%. That's the gift tax. But no, if you give the money to private equity guys who, you know, you don't know, they're not your kin, it's taxed at 15%. Well, here is the article from just a couple of days ago. Mitt Romney in South Carolina, after speaking to a smaller-than-usual crowd on Tuesday morning in Florence, South Carolina, Mitt Romney took questions from the press. And I guess somebody there in the press had the gall to ask Mitt Romney, what's your effective tax rate, Mr. Romney? Since you won't divulge your taxes, you won't turn over your tax returns, what's your effective tax rate? So he got asked the question. And Mr. Romney said, well, it's probably closer to the 15% rate than anything. Because my last 10 years, my income comes overwhelmingly from investments made in the past, rather than ordinary income, or rather than earned annual income. Mr. Romney added, and then I get speaker's fees from time to time, but not very much. Well, first of all, when Mr. Romney was in private equity, I can assure you that he was paying whatever the long-term capital gains tax rate was at that time. Back in the 1990s, may have been 20 or 25%, but it probably was not as high as the income tax rate, the highest bracket. And certainly now that he continues to receive proceeds from those investments, it's now 15%. Doyle is asking me, what's the tax rate for a lottery winner? A lottery winner will pay an income tax rate. And that would be a 35% tax rate, assuming the lottery's a big one. And then Mr. Romney says he gets speaker's fees, but they're not very much. This is great. In fact, in the most recent dollars in speaker's fees. Is that not very much to anyone listening out there, or is that a lot? $374,000.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, it's not very often.
I'm just wondering, is that a lot or a little? I don't know what, and so I've been getting lots of feedback from the show I did last week. I've got conservative friends, you know, what did I say they should be called? Disservative, right?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Because we know conservatives have never conserved anything except their own money. Right? That's what conservative means, right? If you're conservative, you've never conserved sharks in the ocean or lions in Africa or atmosphere or air in the atmosphere or, you know, anything like that.
Tangible.
You've conserved one thing. We know what you're going to conserve if you're a so-called conservative. I'm the real conservative. I want to conserve everything. Everyone else who calls themselves conservatives are disservatives. Anyway, Mr. Romney made $374,000. According to him, that's not very much. And so all I'm saying, I'm not saying Mitt Romney's a bad guy or Bain Capital's a criminal organization or anything like that. I'm just saying, okay, this man is now running for president, and here in this year of 2012, when we've got a lot of people who are out of work, we have what has been decade after decade of growing inequality in this country brought on, I don't know if it's in large part, but certainly brought on, a major contributor has been the use of the tax code and the way it's been used. Certainly the war on drugs, which has become a war on African Americans and a war on Hispanic Americans. You know, all these things are there, and one wonders whether Mitt Romney is sufficiently like the rest of us to serve as president. I mean, that's a legitimate and fair question, is it not? Is someone who has become incredibly, extraordinarily wealthy through a very permissive tax code, which, and I'm not faulting Mitt Romney and the rest of the guys who went to Harvard Business School and Harvard and said, we're going to go get that money at the 15% tax rate. And that includes all the hedge fund guys out there. You know who you are. You're paying your 15% carried interest. Remember, the 15% carried interest is not just a private equity phenomenon. It's any limited partnership where a transfer of capital takes place from limited partners to a general partner. So hedge funds also are organized as limited partnerships. Venture capital funds are organized as limited partnerships. There are oil and gas funds that are organized as limited partnerships. And in all of those, the promoter, the general partner, the sponsor of the fund, the guys who go out and find the investments, get a carried interest. As I described to you, they get a deal called 2 and 20. 2 and 20. They get a 2% often, not always. Some get 5 and 50. Imagine that. 5% fees and 50% of the carried interest. The most famous of those is a firm called SAC Capital, run by a guy named Stephen Cohen, another gazillionaire. So the 2 and 20 deal is what has made private equity, hedge funds, all of these funds possible, and many of them are funded. Their limited partners are pension funds. Your money, put in by a bunch of guys sitting in an office somewhere in Austin or Albany or, you know, Sacramento, who hand the money over to the private equity guys. I want to remind you about a story that I brought to your attention. It's been maybe a year ago or so. And that story took place in California. That was the story of a guy, and I forgot his name, Al something. Let's just call him Mr. Al. Mr. Al had been the deputy mayor of the city of Los Angeles. And when he stepped down from this position, he was hired to become a board member of CalPERS, which is the California Pension Plan. It's the maybe the largest, I think it's the largest pension plan in the country. CalPERS is the pension organization that manages pensions for California. I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think it's California firemen and police and teachers, and just a huge, huge pension fund. And so Mr. Al took his seat on the board of CalPERS and was then approached by a group called the Apollo Group. People have forgotten about this story, but it's out there. The Apollo Group is one of the major private equity firms run by a guy named Leon Black. So it's a competitor to Bain Capital. And what did Apollo Group want from Mr. Al, who was at this point, stepped down as deputy mayor of Los Angeles, right? How much does the deputy mayor of Los Angeles know about finance and investments? So he became a director. Apollo Group came to him. What did they want? They wanted Mr. Al to get them in good at CalPERS. And what did they want CalPERS to do? What did the Apollo Group want the pension fund for the teachers and firemen and police to do? They wanted them to give them a lot of money. They wanted them to become their limited partners in their private equity fund. That's what the Apollo Group wanted. And how did they go about doing it? Well, they got Mr. Al, who was now sitting on the board of CalPERS, to go in and grease the skids. And ultimately, the Apollo Group, led by Mr. Leon Black, who, by the way, worked with Michael Milken at Drexel Burnham back in the 1980s. Look, all brilliant financiers. These guys know money like nobody's business. I've got no problem saying that. But look, do you want them running the country? That's the question with Mitt Romney. Do you want them unregulated? Do you want them taxed at 15%? That's the question here. Okay, so back to California. The Apollo Group had Mr. Al go, and what did CalPERS just totally, objectively, on the just basis that Apollo would be the best guys to give money, how much money did they end up giving them for their private equity fund? Dose. $1 billion. $2 billion. Okay? $2 billion. Now, I've told you 2 and 20, so you can do the math on 2 and 20. So if I told you that CalPERS gave the Apollo Group, after this deputy mayor brought him in the door, 2 and 20, they got 2 and 20 on the $2 billion, what were the management fees each year for the Apollo Group? Well, the first year, what's 2% of $2 billion? $40 million. So the first year, the Apollo Group got $40 million in fees, and the second year they got $40 million in fees, and the third, every year they got $40 million in fees that came from the pension fund of the teachers and the firemen and so forth. You see what's going on here? Now, let's say Apollo Group took the $2 billion and turned it into $3 billion, right? So they made $1 billion appreciation. I don't know what the numbers were on it. I don't know what any of these numbers are. I just know the $2 billion number is correct. And so they take down another 20% of $1 billion. So it's another $200 million. You see that one introduction by ex-mayor, deputy mayor Al of the Apollo Group into the California CalPERS pension plan brought $500 million in fees to the Apollo Group. And what did Mr. Al get for his trouble? Did he do it out of the kindness of his heart? What do you think, dear listener? No. Ex-deputy mayor Mr. Al, now director of CalPERS, sitting in charge of your pension plan, got a finder's fee, a consulting fee, paid back to him by the Apollo Group. And that amount was $50 million. You get the picture? Now, unbelievably, I think none of it was actually legal. Actually, Mr. Al, I think, was brought up on charges. They've now beefed up the rules in California, and CalPERS has beefed up its rules. This particular maneuver was called pay to play in the private equity world. It took place in California. It probably takes place here in Texas, takes place in New York. It was a big deal in New York, in the New York state government, and pay to play. Lots of scandal over it. Guys like the Apollo Group and Bain Capital and Colbert Kravis paying ex-politicians to get them in the door at pension plans. All this is happening with your money. And it's all legal. Now, back to Mitt Romney. Oh, and by the way, it's all taxed at 15% for the private equity firm. Mitt Romney is going to say none of this is worthy of examination by the citizens of America. Right? He went out and turned around companies and worked hard and formed his thing and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Right? Okay. But I want everyone to understand all of this is worthy of examination. All of it. The tax rate, the pay-to-play, the carried interest, the kickbacks to politicians, the enormous amounts of debt that are taken on. And remember, the other thing that fuels private equities, I told you last week, is that they take on large amounts of debt. They load the debt onto the organizations. And why is that? Because debt interest is deductible. They can deduct the interest payments on debt. So their goal is to get the least amount of equity partners as they can, take as much carried interest as they can of that equity. That's the biggest, most optimal bang for the buck. Those of you who are engineers, you know about optimizations, right? And where things are optimal, right? When you're building bridges and you're building things, you don't want to overbuild things. You want to build just to the right point where it's going to be the right strength. And that's exactly what the private equity guys are. They're engineers. They're financial engineers. They know if they raise $1 billion in equity, they're going to get to take down X amount in carried interest, in management fees, and the rest they're going to put in debt. Because they can deduct the debt. They don't have to take other partners on, and the benefits will accrue to them. Remember, interest on debt is not deductible everywhere in the world. In fact, the reason you don't have a lot of private equity activity in Germany is because in Germany, you cannot deduct interest payments. There is no reward in Germany for loading a company up with debt. Oh, and by the way, which country has pretty much the strongest economy in the world right now, the most balanced, the least distorted between people? Oh, that would be Germany. All right. We're going to go to your calls in just a second. 713-526-5738. The phones are filling up. We're going to have so much interesting fun with private equity over the next year as Mr. Romney tries to tell everybody that it shouldn't be looked at. It's not worthy of our attention. He's just he's a guy who worked hard in school and got a Harvard MBA and turned companies around. I've got friends and family who send me emails to that effect. Yeah. One more thing on private equity before we get to the calls. We could talk about Rick Perry dropping out of the race too, but you know what? I mean, who cares? I'll just be really glad to have our governor back. I've really missed him, and I'm glad that the citizens of the country turned him down so he can come back and help us here in Texas be all that we can be, because we really, really need him bad. One more article, and then we're going to get to the phones. This is from the Associated Press. AP reports that a billionaire is going to donate $7.5 million. Okay, a billionaire with a B is going to donate $7.5 million with an M to repair the Washington Monument, the WM. You got it? AP reports a billionaire history buff. AP always puts it in these sort of, you know, unknowing, wide-eyed ways. A billionaire history buff has stepped forward. Whereas if you read things like Wall Street Journal and Deal Book out of New York Times, they wouldn't be saying a billionaire history buff has stepped forward to donate. They would say David Rubenstein, the head of the Carlyle Group, is going to pay $7.5 million, right? Because we know who that is. You know who the Carlyle Group is. And I told you last week that David Rubenstein and two of his other partners just took $400 million for the three of them out of the Carlyle Group for their payment for last year's carried interest. And that $400 million will be taxed at the 15% tax rate. Anyway, David Rubenstein, 1 week after all this brouhaha over private equity has brewed up, has decided that he's going to show his magnanimous side. He is going to donate a $7.5 million matching gift that's needed to start repairing cracks near the top of the Washington Monument that were caused by last summer's East Coast earthquake. You may remember there was a freak earthquake in Washington, D.C. last summer. Businessman David Rubenstein said he was inspired to help fund, the repairs to the 555-foot obelisk when it became clear how severely damaged it was by the August 23rd earthquake. The National Park Service and Nonprofit Trust for the National Mall announced Rubenstein's gift Thursday morning. It is the largest gift to the nonprofit group, which aims to raise $350 million to restore the mall's grounds and facilities. Isn't that pathetic? Our country's in such bad shape that our government can't even afford to fix the Washington Monument without the plutocrats stepping in.
Yeah, well, they probably gave that $7 million to that guy. I wouldn't doubt it.
Rubenstein, government contract. Yeah, Rubenstein came forward very soon after the earthquake. National Park Service Director Jonathan Jarvis said, "I would suggest it hadn't even stopped shaking before David Rubenstein came to me and asked if he could help." Our National Park Service director is so besotted by David Rubenstein coming forward as the walls are still shaking. Let me keep going here. This is fascinating. God, where is this?
I like how they try to glamorize this person. Yeah. It's the American dream. Everyone
right,
wants
it's American
to
dream.
Be the rich
right,
man.
Right. So here's the bottom of the article I wanted everybody to hear. The Washington Monument was built originally with private donations. Okay? That eventually totaled over $1 million, Rubenstein said. Let me read it again, though, to just fill in this other additional detail. The Washington Monument was built with private $1 donations. Eventually totaling over $1 million, Rubenstein said. Construction began in 1848, but funds ran out. It was eventually completed in 1884. And Rubenstein is pointing out to us that the original construction was paid for with $1 donations. Right? Back then, the building of the monument was a communal, societal effort with everyone apparently pitching in with $1 donations. What more do you need to know than that here we are in 2012, and it's no longer everybody sending a dollar to rebuild the Washington Monument. It's a single plutocrat, private equity manager, kicking in $7.5 million, and he's got it to spare. Of course he does. He hasn't paid any taxes in the last 30 years.
I'm sure that's a deduction, too.
Yeah. Is it a deduction? I'm sure it's a deduction.
Oh, yeah.
Of course it is. Absolutely, Doyle. Fantastic of you to point that out. He's going to take a $7.5 million tax deduction because it's a 501c3 that they set up. And so he's going to take it. Anyway, to me, the whole thing is rotten. He thinks he's doing good work. He's stepping up a week after the brouhaha starts on Mitt Romney. My interpretation of this article is totally the opposite. Back when the Washington Monument was built, everybody kicked in a dollar to raise the money to build it. Or 50 cents or whatever. Back then, that was a lot of money. Here we are in 2012, and one guy who hasn't basically paid to pay very much in taxes over the last 30 years, who has been accompanied by his pension plan partners, people who are supposed to be acting on behalf of you and me and firemen and policemen and pipe fitters and teachers, instead have been taking your retirement money and giving it to the David Rubensteins of the world. Here he is stepping in to save the Washington Monument. Okay, let's take a quick break, Doyle. Can we do that? We have time to do it, and then we'll go to the phones. We'll have 20 minutes. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Mark and CW are holding, but we got plenty of room for other people to get in and talk about these issues. Again, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Just real quick, you can find me on Facebook under Leo Gold. Search on Leo Gold. I'm on Facebook and New Capital Show, and also on newcapitalshow.com is the website. We'll be back in just a second. Get to it. Mark has been holding the longest. Mark, welcome.
Hi. I'd like to talk a little bit about the ocean and the environment. There's been two recent If You Love This Planet, and one of them was discussing the acidification of the ocean is happening faster than they are anticipating. It may even happen within 20 years, and that would be no more shellfish in the ocean. So the krill would die, and the whales eat the krill, so we won't have any whales. And the other thing she was talking about was that the radioactive elements from the Fukushima power plant are showing up in our oceans in the small fish 5 to 6 inches long right now, which means in another year, if you eat any large fish like tuna, mackerel, salmon, anything like that, you're going to be eating radioactive fish. So basically, you have about a year to eat all the fish you want, because after that, you're just taking your health in your hands.
Yeah,
so that's basically all I have to say.
Yep. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the call. I don't know what to say. Don't know what to say about it. We'll see. This certainly is a different issue with radioactive material coming out of Fukushima as opposed to just the mass slaughter of sea life. But they're both critically vital issues to life on this planet.
Yeah, I've been real careful about the seaweed that I buy, because I eat seaweed, but I try not to buy the nori from Japan right now because I'm just kind of too worried about the radioactivity.
Yeah, I mean, this is a position we're in where we're killing everything one way or another, and if you're, regardless of your political orientation, we've got to solve these problems. It's not optional. These are not optional things, and yet the focus that our government and other governments of the world give to these issues is minuscular, and that's got to change. And everybody can see what happened yesterday with the internet companies of the country going dark, going silent, and forcing changes in Congress. I mean, that happened overnight. You see that people really can make things happen if we will demand it. And we've got to demand changes. We've got to demand that our oceans be protected. They're doing that now in California, Oregon, Washington, Canada. We should be lending our voices to that here in Texas. We can't have oceans with no sea life. Next is, next is CW, who's been holding the longest. CW, welcome to the New Capital Show.
New Year, gentlemen, and thank you.
Thank you.
Two subjects I'd like to speak about that you were talking about today. First of all, the sea life. I totally agree. Our mammals, the whales, the dolphins, we are not doing a good job of taking care of them. The shipping lanes, the naval lanes, the sonar pings, it is totally ruining their natural travel paths of feeding and mating, and that's why you're seeing these different deals. You know, as far as what happened with the whole BP oil spill, that was a nightmare. We are killing our oceans. We are creating dead zones the size of Delaware out there, and that's what's driving the sharks in to find the food. And so basically, in our giant aquarium that we all share as a species, we're losing right now, and that's really troubling. So we've always been identifying the problem, whether it's on these type shows or on the other, on further down the dial, if you're on a conservative show. We're always identifying the problem, but we're never coming up with any solutions. And there's a lot of folks with solutions out there. Secondly, sir, anytime I hear Michael Milken, I think he should be the poster child of Occupy Everything. That guy created junk bonds, and everyone knows Wall Street's a casino. The house always wins. We should do what the Icelanders did and say, too big to fail, come on. 94% of the people of Iceland said, no, we're not going to bail you out. And you look at Iceland today, the people are flourishing. They're flourishing, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, CW. I wouldn't say they're flourishing. They've gone through a massive banking crisis. As for Michael Milken, was innovative in many ways. Of course, specifically around junk bonds, and organizations got funded that might not otherwise have gotten funded. But there is a controversial aspect to him as well. And it's kind of the same thing with Mitt Romney, which is do we want to be electing somebody as president who has been the absolute direct beneficiary of very lopsided tax policies in the world, and that's just in the country, and that's something that people are going to have to think about and talk about as his candidacy gets examined. 713-526-5738. We've got about another 15 minutes left in the show. Plenty of lines open if you want to get in. Next is going to be Tag on line 3. Welcome, Tag.
Yeah, I kind of like how all these conservatives are talking about, the trickle down, and they're going to be, they want to cut government services, and then they're going to step in and take over for everything. So here's one guy who steps up. He's going to fix a national monument. Well, hooray, hurrah. I'm glad somebody's making an effort. But, and then the other thing is, I like what Warren Buffett did recently. We put the Republicans up to the task of, listen, we've been making so much money, I'm going to match whatever you guys will pay. Well, he's actually stepped up and put his money in now, and I don't know if any Republicans have or not. And then the other thing, I just heard the other day that, and this is so fascinating to me, you may know about it, over in Greece, these rich guys, the oligarchs, I suppose, have been buying the credit default swaps that the government's going to go under, and they say, this is a huge reason why Greece is struggling right now. So, there's so much BS going on. I'd use some other words. Keep it clean. And so maybe you could speak to some of that, and I'll let you go. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Tag. Thanks very much. I don't know what to say about Greece. The bonds, as people have been reporting the last few days, over the past several months, passed from the hands of European banks into the hands of hedge funds. And that's not a surprise. Hedge funds, many of them are in the business of looking for distressed investments where they think they can make money. They may well make money on Greek bonds, which presumably they bought for such a low price. And if they can get the Greek government to agree to default only to a certain degree, and so let's say they bought the bonds at 10 cents on the dollar and they can get the Greek government to pay 25 cents, they made a very, very handsome profit. And, there's nothing wrong with that. As a financial advisor, I simply caution everybody to understand that your investments should be broadly diversified. You should be looking to pay low fees, not high fees, which is what private equity represents and hedge funds often represent. And to not be persuaded by what you hear in the financial media, because most of what you hear in the financial media on a daily, ongoing basis is a lot of noise and will get you to take actions that are contrary to your interests, to your long-term financial position, to retirement, education, and so forth. You have to have a plan. You have to stick to it. You have to know what that plan or what plan is appropriate for you given your position. So, I mean, Tag, that's what I would say, and not to focus too much on Greece. The world markets know about Greece. They've known about Greece for a long time, and markets have been reacting to Greece for a long time. Of course, we had the credit downgrade. We had the credit downgrade last week on last Friday of 9 nations in Europe, and the markets have barely budged. In fact, the euro has rallied, and European stock markets have rallied. And the same thing basically happened in the United States back in August when S&P downgraded the U.S. government's credit rating. So what everyone needs to understand is that our markets, and especially our public capital markets, really do respond to information very quickly and have understood what's going on in Greece and Europe. And those price decreases as a result of the situation there took place, you know, last year and toward the end of last year. Just because S&P comes out and says we're lowering the credit rating doesn't mean that that's a surprise to the market. And so you should not be making decisions based upon those announcements. Next is Brad. Brad, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, I'm a first-time listener and obviously a first-time caller, and I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you.
So my question is kind of along the lines of I don't understand really what your problem with private equity is. I mean, obviously they invest people's funds from pensions, but people wouldn't invest with them if they didn't return some kind of good return on the investment, right? I mean,
well, I just gave yes and no. I just gave you the case in Los Angeles where someone who's a director of CalPERS was paid $50 million to bring in a private equity firm.
Okay.
So that's just rank bribery.
Yeah, and that's true. But overall, it returns a pretty good return on investment from the numbers I've seen in private equity. Otherwise, the industry just simply wouldn't be around anymore. I mean, that's how capital markets work, right? I mean, if it doesn't work, it goes away.
Well, what does private equity generally invest in, Brad? What types of companies?
A lot of them are distressed.
Okay, and is a distressed company a higher risk or a lower risk investment than a non-distressed company?
Well, it's certainly higher risk.
Okay, and to get somebody to take a higher risk investment, what do you have to provide?
Everybody knows higher risk equals higher return.
Exactly.
Or no return.
That's right.
Right.
So, that's exactly right. So it's no mystery that private equity investing in distressed assets would provide higher returns. They have to, in order to be able to get funding because the risks are so much higher.
Right,
so all that is an asset class play. My disagreement with private equity is the taxation of carried interest. Does that make sense?
No, that absolutely makes sense. But to attack the whole entire industry for that. I don't know. It just seems a little overboard. And secondly, you know,
why do you think that someone who has capital transferred to them in such vast amount should be taxed at a long-term capital gains tax rate as the original holder of that capital?
Well, no, I don't think that at all. In fact, I mean, the tax policies of this country and maybe especially this industry.
Yeah.
Certainly may need to be changed, but you cannot fault those people that are engaging in those activities.
Wait a minute. I've been over backwards to say I don't consider them to have broken the law or to be criminals.
I consider them
to be plutocratic beneficiaries of a misguided tax policy.
Right.
And not only that, they will continue to defend it. Mitt Romney will continue to defend it. He will continue to benefit from it as he did last year. He continues to pay 15% tax on carried interest that he received years ago, and he's running for president. And so all I'm saying is that should receive scrutiny from American voters.
No, I agree, and I think it boils down to the right tax policy, and I'm not going to fault anybody, whether they're a presidential candidate or not, for trying to take the most advantage of the situation they're in.
Well, do you want him to be president, though? Do you think he's going to get into office and make tax policy that's sensible?
Well, presidents don't set tax policy.
Well, wait a minute. What do you mean?
Presidents don't set them. Congress sets tax policy.
But the president has a very, very substantial and outsized, in relation to his being a single person, outsized influence on tax policy.
He's got
to get a bill through. So my question to you is, do you think Mitt Romney is going to lead revision of tax policy in a way that it needs to happen?
Well, no. I mean,
okay. Well, I don't either, and I don't think he should be voted for as a result.
But who do you think is going to do that? You know, I mean,
I think Barack Obama will. Yes, I think Barack Obama
would.
Barack Obama has advocated for changing carried interest, but he's not been able to get it through Congress. Brad, great to have you.
And that's exactly what I'm saying, is that it's really Congress who holds these strings.
You've got a better chance with the president who's going to try to lead that.
Well, with the veto power, too. You know.
And he can veto as well.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Brad, thanks for the call. Great to have you. Keep
for
listening.
Sure.
Great to have you.
Perfect.
Okay, Ron is next on line one. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I totally disagree with what the president did a couple of days ago as far as the pipeline.
Uh-huh.
I feel like, you know, the so-called environmental risk or worse, the rewards of hiring all those people. I just don't understand it. I mean, in this kind of economy where people are hurting,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's where you always err on the side of jobs. And, I mean, everybody, the whole environmentalist movement, I mean, I'm all for better efficiency, better use of energy, recycling and all that good stuff. But every process has waste. I mean, people act like if you eat something, you're not going to have to go to the bathroom later on.
Well, Ron,
there's no clean process. Yeah.
Let's talk, you know, Ron, this is a highly political issue, this pipeline. And frankly, you know, I don't know if I'm not a pipeline engineer, so I haven't studied whether the chances that this pipeline are going to leak are nil or what. It's just not an issue I've delved too deeply in, and I'm sure that there are arguments on both sides. What I would observe and encourage you to observe is that this is a presidential election, and that places like Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Nebraska, places where I think this pipeline is going to pass. The pipeline is controversial, and so I think
maybe those people want both Obama. Did they vote for him last time?
I don't know. I don't remember how those states voted, but I think that in many cases, I think Nebraska might have gone for Obama, and I think that the president in making that decision is responding not just to environmental concerns, which I would want him to respond to, but he's also responding to local politics in these states, and there are a lot of people in these states who don't want the pipeline going through their territory because there's no benefit in it for them. Does that make sense, Ron?
Yeah, I understand that. I disagree, but I understand it.
So I promise you that this was made, and this is the one time I've ever agreed with Mitch McConnell, who did come out and say it's unfortunate that this issue has fallen prey to politics in 2012, but I think that's exactly right, what Mitch McConnell said. And I think the president and his advisors on this got together and said, you know, which way is the wind blowing in these swing states? Remember that, is it Montana or Wyoming where Brian Schweitzer is a Democrat? John Tester is in a battle for his Senate seat there. So I don't know exactly, but I have a feeling that it has to do with local politics. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Okay, we've just got about time for one more quick call, and that's going to be George. George, welcome.
Good afternoon. You know, fresh water is, you look at the drought we had here recently, that Ogallala Reservoir is vital.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean.
Yes, it is.
You look at what happened with BP. I mean, regulation, you know, 15 people lost their lives there. People lost their lives. 29 miners lost their lives.
Yep.
No regulation.
Agreed.
Right here in Pasadena, you don't have to look for it. Right here in Galveston Bay, rather, excuse me. You know, we just found another Superfund site. We have this other Superfund site that existed for over three decades. You know, you have dioxins in Galveston Bay. You can't even eat more than 8 ounces of it
okay.
in a month. And now there's another Superfund site which occurred from 2002 to 2010.
George, I got it. I'm out of time.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
The call and the points.
Uh-huh.
George is absolutely right. If it can't be built safely, and I mean totally safely, then it shouldn't be built. And so as I said, environmental concerns about the XL pipeline should be answered. And if they can't be answered and they can't be solved, then the thing shouldn't be done. So, but as I said, that's not the only thing at work here, and everybody should understand that. That does it for another edition of New Capital Show. Thanks to Doyle for engineering the show. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to all of our callers. I'll be back next week with you, newcapitalshow.com, and friend me on Facebook, and I will friend you back. Take care. Next is the news, and then Democracy Now! Is going to be on later at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned.
The Sounds of Texas Music Series proudly present Grammy Award-winning and International Bluegrass Hall of Famer Del McCurry and the Del McCurry Band, performing at the historic Crichton Theater in Conroe, Texas, Saturday, February 4th. Del McCurry is a celebrated songwriter and musician with an enthusiastic and international fan base known as the Delheads, and has influenced a great number of bands such as Fish, and has covered songs by artists as diverse as The Lovin' Spoonful, Richard Thompson, and Tom Petty. McCurry has also appeared on Late Night with Conan O'Brien and The Late Show with David Letterman. Join the Delheads in this one-of-a-kind performance, spotlighting one of the most talented entertainers in American folk and bluegrass music. Tickets may be purchased online at CrichtonTheater.org. For more information, visit the Sounds of Texas Music Series.com. Del McCurry, only at the historic Crichton Theater, only in Conroe, Texas. This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Telling his boys in town have come to play.
Hey, this is your genuine canine, the Blues Hound, host of Howlin' the Blues, inviting you to join me each and every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. Each week, I'll bring you the best new blues releases from around the world, interviews, and studio performances. And Baby Girl will let you know what's going on around town with the music calendar. And you might even catch us giving out a ticket or two. That's Howlin' the Blues every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. 2 hours of your blues muscle. And it's all right here on your listener-sponsored community radio. That's Pacifica, baby. 90.1 FM at KPFT Houston, your blues authority.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM. Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawad hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hai Pacifica Toy Kissing Scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke